You can have all the money in your hand, all the possessions anyone can ever have, but it's all worth your treasure. True worth is only measured not by what you got, but what you got in your heart. You can have everything. But what does it mean? It all means nothing if you don't care to put something. You can't just touch the top. You got to walk that walk. Yes, you do. It all means nothing if you don't care to put something. And I stand up for you. And I stand up for you. Yes, I will. Yes, I will. Look in the mirror, proud of who's looking back at you. Do you find the life you're living? Not by what you take, but what you're keeping. And if you bet on love, there's no way you'll ever lose. Take a stand, make a stand for what's right. It's always worth, always worth the fight. It all means nothing, and if you don't stand up.
I understand, ain't here to judge, just to take a stand. The greater plan's the creator's plan. Let's all rise like the day began. Reach out and touch with the Savior's hand. On rock we stand like his native land. Let the ways of love be the ways of man.
USI never had it so good. 101.1 radio, the best R&B and hip hop music. The Quiet Storm every Friday and Saturday. Talk radio with the best host in the business. Sports talk radio every weekend night with Princess Cooper. Never had it so good radio now on 101.1, and it's 24/7. The world's best radio station.
In this day and time, stereotypes are the false descriptions for all of humanity. James T. Deshaies is the author of two great poetry books that attempt to describe life from a male perspective. It has been a common belief that men are unable to put into words their deepest feelings and spend most of their time focused on the surface of what life means. Thoughts, love, and reflections, and passion, desire, and contemplation take you on a journey that has very few travelers. Mr. Deshaies has opened his heart and spirit up in ways that few have ever experienced. The depth of his poetry will have you reading his books and poems over and over again. You will find yourself using his passages to describe your own feelings to your family and friends. It is now time to put aside your thoughts and feelings related to the depth of men's thoughts and delve deeply into the words of James T. Deshaies. Once again, he will put an end to your thoughts that men can't translate their heartfelt spirit into words. Both of these books will allow you to find comfort in the reality of the heart of men. You will spend hours trying to embrace the way men want to love and display their passion to the women they love. Don't be fooled by those books that create love through words of lust, vulgarity, and unhealthy displays of sexual activities. You will discover the types of words that will allow you to rejoice in the future of what love truly means to men. Your book clubs and families will be able to discuss these words without fear. No one will have to leave the room. Both of these books can be purchased at jamestdeshaies2.com and lulu.com. Feel free to reach out to the author at tlreflectionsjtd@gmail.com.
To hold. everyone. This is James T. Deshay, the host of Thoughts, Love, and Reflection, brought to you by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network. And as always, I am pleased and happy to be here with you, giving us the opportunity to talk about the things that impact our world now and in the future. And there are so many things that we need to talk about. I mean, I'm deluged by all the things that we need to make comments about and speak about. Because when you speak about things, you empower yourself to do things about it, and you also go on record. And it's important that we go on record about all the kinds of different things that impact our lives. And today I was sent an article by one of the people who call in every day almost, and she is a major part of our show. It's Cheryl. Cheryl sent me an article about a man who spent 31 years in prison and was falsely convicted, and now is dealing with the fact that he is trying to adjust to being on the outside. He's ill-equipped to work because of the number of years they've taken away from him. And now he has to wait to see if he'll be able to get some kind of reimbursement for the years that he spent in jail. You know, and I have to go on record. I want to say that any man who is falsely convicted of a crime, no matter how long or short that he is in jail, should be given some kind of financial reimbursement for the time that he served. And as we talk about this today, I just want to talk about the fact that there are a lot of places who refuse to give reimbursement, and there are some states that do. But also, I think there's something wrong. I saw a story the other day where a man was given instead of giving him an opportunity to go before a new jury and show the new information that he had, they offered to release him and not put him on release him, but he would have to confess to doing the crime so that the state would not be liable if he were found innocent. And the man took the plea deal because he was afraid that if something went wrong, that he would go back to jail. And I have a problem with the state being able to offer that kind of deal. And the reason I have a problem with them being able to offer that kind of deal is because people will take that because of their fear of not being treated fairly. And if there is some doubt in the state's mind that they're willing to allow a person to get out of jail without being on probation, and without serving his complete time, then they need to realize that there is enough doubt to give him exoneration. I don't think you ought to be giving a person such a sweet deal that they're afraid to fight for their innocence. You know, you're supposed to be, if there's some doubt in your being convicted, or what the state believes, then you shouldn't be asked to commit to something or suggest that you did something that you didn't do because you already served enough time and they willing to let you go instead of go before another judge. I have a problem with that. So today we just want to talk about what should be the state obligation to you if you're wrongly convicted, and should they have the right to offer you a sweetheart deal that makes you confess so that you can go home? Or Would you be willing to do that? Cheryl, so since you sent me the article, let me know what it is you feel about this man's situation and how people ought to be treated related to the prison system and their freedom.
Found this article to be very interesting because after someone is wrongfully accused, now we know that the states receive funds for everyone that's in prison. But if you're found not guilty and all of those years of your life that you've been behind bars and they only give you $75 when you walk out the door. And I understand from state to state, it differs with the amount of money. But it's no way that this man should have been in jail for 31 years without any kind of compensation on a yearly basis. And I'm thinking that Tennessee is $32,000 a year for every year. I do know it varies from state to state what the amount is, because some states is $50,000, and depending on what the conviction is. I was just trying to look up. I had been kind of busy after I sent the article, but I was trying to look up to see for sure, you know, if it was $32,000 based upon, you know, the crimes that he was convicted for, falsely accused for. But, you know, it's so easy to take away from us. But when it's time to give, it's like you got to fight for it. And, I mean, he done lost all of these years of his life. And now somebody on the parole board is saying that they don't believe, even after the DNA proved him to be innocent, and she said that she doesn't know whether he's guilty or innocent. But still, I mean, if he was exonerated, then he should be compensated without a doubt. And he definitely should not have been waiting since 2009 till now. Not at all.
And Cheryl, I find that so interesting. It is so interesting to me. There are one thing can convict you, but that one thing can't exonerate you. You know, it's amazing. They have every excuse for why they should keep you, but if they get one thing wrong, that shouldn't be the only thing. Well, we missed that, but he still did it. You know, but that they can have one thing that convicts a person, but that can't be the one thing that releases them. And you know, I find that so odd. And so a lot of times, and we need to have this discussion about changing the attitude of the prosecutors, because I think prosecutors need, instead of being so focused on getting convictions, they don't need to be focused on getting the truth and stop worrying about their conviction rate, because I think it is so unacceptable to have people locked up for any length of time if they didn't do the crime. I don't want to be locked up for 30 days. I spent 10 years at the jail, working at the jail, and I can tell you I wouldn't want to be locked up inside those rooms 10 days, no length of time. Any length of time would be traumatic. I believe if you were those of us who really seek to live our lives correctly would find it detrimental to be locked up for any length of time. So I think it needs to be a federal law that requires people who have been locked up and found innocent to get some kind of reimbursement for the time that they've spent locked up, and that they shouldn't be given a deal where they'll just release them and not have a new trial if they're willing to just say they did it and move on. Because that is just too much. You know, when you do that, it is difficult for a person who's already afraid of the system to fight for their rights. Dee, what is your thought?
Good evening, everybody. Jane, this topic is too interesting, just to say the least. There is no way that this outrage can be justified. For a man to be locked away for 31 years, there is no amount less than making him absolutely wealthy that can actually excuse this type of misbehavior by the justice system. You know, for him to be locked away 31 years and missing the maturity and family time with his kids, trying to convince his family that he was innocent in the first place, getting out of prison 31 years later, not being sure that his wife had the mindset to go on with her life, and then come out and not being sure that she has been faithful. Hopefully she has. But having to come home and to deal with all of that. And then depending on his age going in, coming out 31 years later, the man might be impotent. All of that. So, you know, for that to be an issue ranging from state to state, that's a total outrage. Because one would have to make this man wealthy to satisfy my sense of justification. In the circumstance of the plea deal being taken, you know, a person to take that deal to plead guilty in order to get out, well, you can't get a job depending on the severity of the crime. Or the issue, or the crime being mentioned in the first place. If it was a felony and you plead guilty, you're done. That's a total outrage, man, for anybody to have to go through that. And you don't have to tell me that in most cases, by and wide, the cases are black. And so that system is well Jim Crow style broken, and if that's still the case in 2017, that should be one of the things that's put on the political forefront for the next candidate, presidential wise, coming in, even governorship or even Congress. That has to be dealt with right there. Thank you.
And the fact is that we already know that all around the country, people are being released based on DNA evidence. And so we need to recognize and understand that if DNA evidence is releasing people from incarceration, and we realize that juries all over the nation are willing to accept DNA as the solving the crime for everything. Because if you got DNA, then you did it. If you were there, you did it. And if the DNA says you did it, then you're guilty. And so if that is the case, then we need to accept it when the DNA exonerates somebody in the same way and be willing to give those people some kind of reimbursement for the time they serve. Because there is nothing more costly or precious to us years that we live. We all by nature want more time, and when you take that amount of time and have people in situations where they could have been killed, I'm sure every day in jail ain't no holiday, and it's possible that every day could be your last day depending on who your roommate is or what is going on in the jail itself. So certainly, Cheryl, there shouldn't be even any question, and a person shouldn't want for anything after you have taken 31 years of their life from them.
You're so right. I mean, you know, to me, what they're doing is now the years of his life was taken away. Now they're stealing his money because what is rightfully his, if it's not given to him, that's the same thing as stealing. And, you know, just like you said, we have to get HIPAA laws for people like this. And to me, it could happen to you. It can happen to any of us. We can be driving and we can be set up. And we can be by ourselves and wrongfully accused, and we can't prove it. So, you know, we have to continue to look at things as though they may happen to us or they may happen to our loved ones. And I say, if they don't give him this, they don't compensate him, they're stealing. They're just a they're thieves. They can do whatever they want to do, and it's okay. Because we don't step up enough. Our voices are not heard. You know, and just like the thing that we were saying yesterday, we have to start doing things, and we have to start making a movement. But all of these things that we talk about that's so wrongfully done, what can we do about them? You know, and I mean, to me, I believe and I know that he should be compensated. Because just like you say it, the fear, the mental situation that he's gone through, I mean, his whole entire life, his life, they can't give that back. You can't get that back at all for no one. And it's like they should have been to overdo when he got out, apologetic. He is, you know, we have to compensate you. This has been since 2009. It's ridiculous. It's totally ridiculous. But I got this from my daughter-in-law because that's where I moved from, Tennessee. And I'm going to look more into it to find out, you know, other than with the parole or somebody on the parole board don't feel like, you know, what would keep him from getting this money and why he haven't gotten it. That's something that I do want to look into and she as well being there. And we do know some law, some people with the law there that can help us to investigate why is it this way and what can be done to change the laws, not only there, but for, you know, all around. Because I really think this is, his life is stolen away from him, and now his being compensated is stolen away from him.
And indeed, the problem is again, you're just right. A lot of when you are poor and disadvantaged, you can't fight on the same level, and even those of us who have a little money can't really fight on the same level as these prosecutors. And so it is equally unfair when you are forced to say you're guilty of something because you're afraid that you don't have the ability to win. When I spent those 10 years and working at the jail, there was times when I told people, you know, when they give them a plea bargain, say, okay, look, we'll give you 2 years. But if you fight us on this, we'll give you 15. I mean, how can you, you know, if you got doubt about your own case and you are not sure about it, that you can go in court and win it as a prosecutor, why should you be able to give somebody a something that's so small just for their confession? Because when you got people who've been in and out of the system, and you're going to give them 2 years versus 15, they're likely to take that two because they're scared of the 15.
But, James, you know, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Look, the system is broken from the ground up. Let me touch on the point about when you are of low income and you can't afford proper counsel. When you got money, like Johnny Crockett said, the color of justice is green. You can obtain an attorney that's willing to go back to the law libraries if he's at a loss. He go back to his firm or to the law library and pull up cases that are similar and find the legality that will help his client to prove his innocence, such as the DNA. If DNA is readily available, then that should be implemented in the trial itself. If you got evidence of any DNA, that should be submitted at the trial when the trial is at hand, not way after the fact. All right, so, and now let's go back to something else, to the basic misunderstanding. The basic misunderstanding is how they racially profile us in the first place. Let's go back to a couple of cases that we dealt with earlier this year, one of which was the young man that was killed in the car with a girlfriend and the baby in the back. The police said that he fit the profile because he had a wide nose like somebody else they were looking for. Boom. All right? Let's go back to the case where the young female teacher was stopped by policemen, thrown to the ground, judo throw to the ground and put in the back of the police car, and he acknowledged to her, and she was mindful enough to have a cell phone on recording when he said, we all know that you people are dangerous anyway. So we already profiled to a disadvantage. Now, my point is that when you got candidates like Roy Moore, Jim Crow candidates that's still in the system, wanting to be elected as some kind of official, then these young candidates coming up, no matter what party you are, you got to be mindful that this world is not your own. And there are some changes that have to be made for all of us to have some kind of fair shake in life. And I think that's a point to be well taken. Now I'm going to rest at that. Thank you.
And I agree with you that there are people who cannot be sensitive to the plight of African Americans, because they assume that we are guilty guilty until proven innocent. And so we have this need to have things really for us, because if we're anywhere close, they just have an insensitiveness toward us. So, Cheryl, it's just incredible that we continue to have this fight where we are just treated so unfairly, because there is no one out there, no matter who they are, what color they are, want to give up that kind of part of their life. No matter what kind of lifestyle they're living, they have their freedom. And to be forced into incarceration, and sort of like what Dee said, why would it take 31 years to find out that this man was not guilty? It seemingly to me, that could have been found out a little sooner, so you wouldn't have all this time, him giving up all this time of his life like that.
You know, we don't have enough lawyers coming together in helping us. You know, if we don't have the money, we're falling through the cracks. We're falling by the wayside. It takes a special person to go back and open up a case like this. But we should have that fight in us from the beginning. You know, there should be lawyers that step up because they know the system. But because greed, money, is all is the driven focus in these situations, a lawyer who could really give some of his time. And, you know, when if a lawyer did something, do you know that the people may come together and do and support him, meaning that they will take and come up with funds to help if they knew case by case? People want to help, but because of the cases is not brought, you know, until like this, years later. But if we can constantly and consistently pull together and not thinking that money has to be everything. So, you know, again, I just think that we got to come together more in different cases. Because now think about this. Whoever the lawyer was, and they couldn't get him off, couldn't somebody else who looked at his case, you know, did something just like it happened right now, 31 years later? DNA just didn't come available in 2009. It became available before then. And we're not doing enough. You know, when our young adults are graduating from college, it is not put in their mind that we got to reach back and help. We got to be the change of the system. Everybody is trying to go to college to get something to make the money. When they make the money, and so they think they arrived, then all they're trying to do is move up and move up. And I'm, when I say that, it's not every single person. It's so many that do that. We got to come together, and we got to move and act on these things. We got to act with urgency. And these are some of the things that we discuss and some of the same words that's been used. We have to act like our life depended on it. And we're not doing that. We're sleeping. We're so asleep. And we can actually make a difference because, you know, when we come together, it is so powerful. But we start something and we stop. We start and stop. We got to make a difference. And as years go on, things are just getting weaker and weaker. Because back then, you know, our people, they came together. Now, I hear all the time, people can't even stand to live with each other. What you mean you can't stand to live with somebody? For a Vietnamese family, a couple. And the guy did not like his in-laws. Well, not the in-laws, but everybody lives with mama. Everybody. And everybody brought the money home to mama. Now, did the brother-in-laws get along? Did the sister-in-laws get? No. Some of them couldn't even stand each other. But they had one goal in mind. Mama took the oldest, set them up in a business, sent them on their way. And the second oldest, until each one of them had their own businesses. They don't care that they don't like each other. It's just the purpose. They were going to get along because they had a common goal. But we can't do that. We spend so much money because we can't stand the next person. I got to live by myself. I can't, you know, I can't do this. Better than that. That, to me, I can't understand. I can't. Because I've had so many people to live with me that I can't understand how we can't be helpers to one another. And that's
trying to right the wrongs that are coming out. Yeah. You know, the problem is, and we ought to hold accountable the prosecuting attorney so that if he's hiding information or not making, you know, his job needs to be about finding the truth and not just convicting the closest and easiest that it is to convict. And same thing with police officers. Don't be out there just trying to find the quickest person to convict. I may have shared this story before, but I want to share it with you again just to show you how they get fixated on one person. Over 10 or 20 years ago, I was at Edgewater High School, and a man was having an affair, and it was his wife and his anniversary. So he took her some flowers, or he did something for their anniversary. But when it was over, he left her at home, and he went off for the evening. The man's son was there, and his wife was left at the home. The son was in his room with earphones on. And, you know, when people put those earphones on, they listen and they can't hear nothing and they may fall asleep. But whatever it was, this man's mother was being killed in the next room. And she was found dead by her husband. Well, they believed that those people, that man and that son, they refused to let them stay together until the investigation was completed. And when I talked to a police officer, he told me, oh, yeah, for sure, he's the one who did it. We know, we just got to get him. And after they did their investigation, there wasn't but one fingerprint or one palm print that was in the house that didn't belong to anybody. And it wasn't until that person robbed another place the same way, crawling through the bedroom window or window and left a palm print and matched the two palm prints up from these two different houses, that they stopped looking at the husband as the person and went ahead and convicted the person who was the burglar. So you see, once they want to go to the easiest person possible. And just because this man had a situation where he was cheating on his wife, they assumed that he would also be willing or able to kill her. So much so that during the time that this man and his son really needed each other, they made sure that the two of them didn't get together so they would have the same story. So, D, you see how the prosecutors, once they get their mind fixated on your guilt, they do everything they can or don't even pay any attention to anything that might suggest you didn't do it.
Yes, Damon, I'm sorry. I was trying to get my phone off mute. Yes, you know, every case by case is different. And but I think what I'd like to do is go back to what Ms. Cheryl was saying about the about young people coming in and not having the passion to intervene to the obvious wrong that's been done by us. First of all, let me touch the base of when it comes down to a defense attorney, and if he has the passion to be that special attorney to turn over every rock and every stone to get the truth, a lot of times he works for a firm. And the firm that the head of the firm that he works for might be still in some kind of way part of the Good Old Boy Network. One of the cases that, you know, they made a movie about the Mississippi Burning or something like that, where Matthew Donahue was the attorney, and I think Samuel Jackson was the defender. You know, the attorney has to pretty much, unless he's independent and has his own firm, his hands a lot of times can be tied about what the firm will allow him to do. Now, but, you know, also to the argument that young people coming in don't have a clue what it is that our plight still might be going forward. You know, that's a generational difference. You know, when back in the late 60s, going into the 70s, we had a common goal. And the common goal was for us to get an education, for us to rejoin our union as a family, and to push through all opposition. But now, like she says, generationally, we have fallen through the cracks. And it is quite frustrating to get back to the continuity that we used to have. And it's also frustrating to figure out how does one do that. So, you know, there's a one step at a time thing that that has to be done, apparently, to get our young people back involved to wanting to join some kind of union to get us back on track. You know, I do want to say this to try to prove my point. Young people today, and James, we've covered this on your show a lot, they're so easily to get angry about everything. And I know a lot of families, today's family, they can't get along with one another because they're so easily to get angry about the littlest thing. So in that, you know, as our own culture of African-American and black people, these are some of the things that we got to fix first before we can even fix the Donald Trump kind of stuff. Because, you know, my contention is once Donald Trump has come to his end, we still got these issues that we have to get over so we can come out better on the other side. And I'm sorry to be long-winded, but thank you.
And just like Cheryl said, too, you know, we need to come together, and somebody needs to create an organization. There are a number of organizations that go back and help help to find people innocent. But I know they need revenue or monies, but then we need to identify these organizations that are willing to help or who are willing to do pro bono work so as we help them to make it less more feasible financially to be able to do it. Because we know there are a lot of people out there who are innocent, who are locked up. Juries make mistakes. And because they make mistakes, we need to help these people who are innocent to find a way out. And so often it's amazing to me, we also need to continue to fight to keep the jury system as it is, because a lot of people want to go to a system where you don't have to have a unanimous decision. And even with unanimous decisions, people are finding people guilty when they didn't do something. So you know how many people will be found guilty if you said you had to have 8 out of 12 jurors. And so, you know, we really have to be concerned about our system, especially when we are the ones who seem to be caught up in it the most without a good representation. It costs a lot of money to defend people. I have a friend of mine who has been paying $700 a month for the last 3 or 4 years to pay for the representation he got for his son. And he still was only able to get his son from 20 years down to 5. So you see that, you know, these lawyers can be extremely expensive. And it's amazing, you know, you have people who are literally going into debt to get good representation. Because if you count on those, the lawyer that they give you through the court system, you may get somebody overworked, underpaid, and undereducated. Cheryl?
You're so right. I mean, and you hit the nail on the head. You say, you know, we have a broken system. It is so broken. And you know, the examples that we see is that, and I can't even think of the movie it was, but it showed where the lawyer padded the cases so that she can be known as always winning her case. And, you know, when you then you have a objective and a goal, and that does not benefit anyone but you. And it's hurting so many innocent people. And it really was a lot of the black people that she was putting behind bars. So I think that was one of my Madea movies. But the illustration of it, everyday life, just like the lady who did with the drug tests, and all of these innocent guys that went to jail because she had the drug test tampered with. I mean, we have to wake up and pay attention to what's going on around us and not to be so lax and so accepting of things. Because, you know, we can get some of these famous people, the ones who's willing, when our voices is loud enough, they'll hear us. And I mean, there's many of them out there. But we got to make some noise. We got to stop being so quiet about everything. You know, just the ones who, you know, the reason why Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks and all of those, you know, it stays on our mind is because they had a movement. They had a purpose. They had a goal. They wanted change. And because of that, you know, we're able to do some things that we weren't able to do. But we got to take, we got to, the baton been passed to us. Now we got to do something with it. We got to pick it up. And we got to start letting our voices be heard. We got to start taking some actions. We got to stop sitting down doing nothing. Because you're right. The lawyers that's appointed lawyers, they don't care. They don't, I mean, and like you said, they're so overloaded. They don't even half of the time know the person's name. Haven't even been able to review over their case. And I've heard that many a times where somebody went to court and the lawyer didn't even know their name. More or less didn't even know the case. So we got to do better. We really got to do better. We got to.
And we got to get back to the point where we say it's more important to let 1,000 men go free than to convict one innocent man. You know, we got to understand there's nothing more detrimental to a person than to be wrongfully accused and convicted of something they didn't do and to be sitting in jail with no hope of getting out when they're innocent. So we really need to polish our system up so that it is not finding itself in these kind of situations. We're going to take another break and come back and continue our conversation. This is so important that we talk about these type situations and go on record and do everything we can. It also means that we need to go to court when we call, because all of us need to support and be a part of the system in order to make sure that it works well, even in its present situation. We'll come right back and continue our conversation.
I need some loving and
Compensated so that money is not something they have to worry about any longer.
You talk about 30 days. Let's just talk about a couple of hours. I wouldn't want to have to spend a couple of hours, not even 1 hour in jail. So, you know, my heart goes out to this man because, you know, for a person who did not commit a crime and to spend 31 years of his life, I mean, they should have really felt bad, not trying to keep him from getting what he deserves, keep him from being compensated for the amount of years being in jail. You know, they should have felt like, I mean, I could not imagine them not having some type of feelings where they felt bad, you know, for him sitting in jail. This is a person's life. See, they don't even think about it like that. They don't think about that it could be their life or it could be their children's life or family member. Anyone that's dear to them, you know. So we have a tendency, we want to dismiss each other and not care and not do what we could to help somebody. Again, and I keep saying, you know, he needs to be compensated, fully compensated. And if they don't, they're stealing from him because they have gotten money from the system, from him, and probably many, many, many more, and cared nothing about the innocent. You know, in the law, in the courtroom, it's all a game. It's all about who has the best lawyer, not whether you're guilty or innocent. Because a lot of lawyers who know that their client is guilty, it's not about that. It's about their reputation, them doing the best job of defending, meaning get them off. We got to do better. We got to come up. We got to stick together.
And it's so sad to sit, and just like Dee said, you know, you can't require a woman to wait for her man to be found innocent. And you're destroying the union of that family by taking this man away from it unjustly. If you know he deserves millions for the relationship that you destroyed, and so no matter how good or bad it was, the relationship was his, and he could no longer participate in the relationship because you took it. So it is just sad that. That should be a federal law. You should have a federal law that supersedes the individual states' laws and require states to reimburse people who found innocent of doing any wrongdoing or found that prosecutors did something wrong. The story I was telling you guys about was where the prosecutors just went on for hours and hours and hours taking this young man who was under the age of 20 and just made him confess and made him led him to believe that if he confessed on some of his friends, then they would allow him to be released. And once he confessed, and we've seen it over and over again, we saw it in New York, with those teenagers who were reimbursed, and we just see it all over the country where some of these people are just really preying on people who are uneducated or on that mentally have some issues, and having them confess on themselves when they're too afraid to stand up for themselves. So we see it being done in all kind of different fashions, Dee, and it's just wrong. And again, the prosecutors and the police departments need to be more interested in going after the truth than just convicting people.
Well, I like to make that my next point. Surely everybody is a witness to now that we living in a new state of mind and time. Not long ago, maybe in July or something, we covered something on your show. We talked about what type of candidate would it take, or who's in a position to step up and become that new person, that new candidate that could galvanize all people. Now, let me say this first. When it comes down to this issue, this is actually a political issue, because the prison system is part of a political system. And if my point in that is, if 85% of the prison system are occupied by black people, and black people only occupy the U.S., the United States, we're only 10% of the population, then that's a political issue. Now, going forward, with the new type of politics that's at hand, thanks to the Donald Trump era, we got to understand that the standard has been lowered for politicians coming in. If we want this wrong to be righted, somebody has to be groomed to appeal to both sides of the racial spectrum. Now, you know, when it came down the type of president that was for the people and for the country also, what comes to mind to me is somebody like John Kennedy. Now, John Kennedy was the president that was appreciative to the appeal of Martin Luther King to endorse the Civil Rights Act, but he didn't get a chance to do it. Him introducing that to the nation is probably one of the reasons he was killed. But you know, Dr. King stood in there and made sure that Lyndon Baines Johnson signed that bill. Now, my point is that for a candidate to be of the people, of all people, it's going to be a risky test. But who is that type of person that's going to step up and right these kind of wrongs that we're talking about going forward? Because, again, the Donald Trump era is supposed to be an eye-opener. If we don't do something to change, then we are doomed for more of the same. Thank you.
And it's important to realize that these people feel emboldened to continue to be the way they are because there's no consequences for these prosecutors or these police officers when they're hiding evidence or they're making up evidence. You know, if they feel comfortable enough to stash drugs in your car or to just make you, go around moving evidence to try to make what it is they're explaining more plausible, then we see that they're willing to do anything. So certainly we need to be forcing people to be more open about the things that they're doing and the things that they're accusing us of doing, so that we can make sure that these guilty pleas or these convictions are closer to being right than they are presently. And again, we need to force people. You know, a lot of times, nobody wants to support convicts. But convicts are people, too. And they should not be wrongly treated in spite of the things they might be accused of, because they may be innocent, and then now you've taken their lives. Every life is valuable, and it needs to be treated as such. And so, Cheryl, we need to demand that people be reimbursed when they are wrongfully convicted, no matter what state you're in. Right is right, no matter what state you're in. So you shouldn't have the bad luck of being in the wrong state when it comes time to get reimbursed.
You're so right. And I mean, that's no more than fair. And we have to start being fair. We have to start demanding fairness. And yes, we, you know, this that would be tirelessly because of the work and the consistency that we would have to, you know, put in for fairness. But we have to start somewhere. We have to start somewhere. You know, and if each person picked where they want to start at, because there's so many different areas. But we do. We have to start somewhere. We have to start participating, being participants in the things that's going on around us. But, yeah, I mean, that would be so unfair for anyone to leave out of prison, falsely accused, and not compensated to the fullest. Not trying to hold anything back from this person because guess what? They have given up their lives. And the system should not try to persuade anyone to take years off of their sentence based upon any kind of plea deal if they are innocent. Or the fact of we won't give you anything and we're going to wash everything. You know, whatever it is, whatever, you know, it shouldn't be done like that. Because what they're doing, they're stealing. That's what they're doing. You know, we say getting over. But getting over is the same thing as stealing. You know, and we got to stop allowing it. And over because we allow it to happen. As a whole, just like Pastor Smith said, as we, the people, we teach people how to treat us. And if we start to stand up for our rights, then, and we constantly stand up for them, they'll get sick and tired of it. But if we do it one day and we stop another day, we do it one year, we stop the next, the whole other year, and then all of a sudden we pop up. So we got to start.
Yeah, you're so right. And we have to develop and reestablish our power and keep it prepared and ready to use in almost every aspect of our lives so to let people know we mean business. We're not going to let the justice system steal years away from the people that we love. If they've done something wrong, then they need to be held accountable. But we want them to be prosecuted justly and fairly and so that we don't have to feel like we're being taken advantage of. Clearly already, we see the unfairness in the system that it depends on who's being shot and who's doing the shooting to who is going to be held accountable.
James, I'm sorry. You have to pass me. I'm checking out at the job. I'm not able to answer
okay.
This time. I apologize.
No problem. But you understand what I'm saying, Cheryl, where you know, if you're a part of a white police officer shooting a black unarmed person, then you're given the benefit of the doubt. If you happen to be a black man and you shooting somebody who looks like they're breaking in your home, you might find yourself in jail. In fact, I remember a story where a group of white boys followed a black young man home and commenced to assaulting him in his yard. And a father came out to stop them from beating his son, and his firearm went off, and they put the man in jail. So I'm supposed to let you come to my house, beat up my son in my front yard without lending him any assistance. Now, you followed my son to his house, and yet you were going to beat him up in my front yard, and when I intervene, I get taken to jail. Now, there's something wrong with that.
It is. It is the wrong way. But, you know, when we begin to speak, we have to do it in a way that we are productive with it. You know, when we begin to burn down businesses and have riots and stuff, we're not hurt like that. We have to stop being so angry, and we have to start using that anger in a different way and not destroying, you know, things that already belong to us. So, I mean, so many things are unfair. And you know what? If we keep letting it get this way, it's not going to get any better. It's just going to get worse. So that's why, you know, I appreciate the platform that you have, because, you know, your listeners are hearing, you know, things that they may not have thought about doing, but become eye-opening to them, and they say, yeah, I can do something. I want to do something. Changes a person's life. Listening to, you know, one of your shows, because it can instill in them something that they had never even thought about. So that's why I so much appreciate this, because, you know, it's given us the opportunity to be able to speak and to make a difference, and for our voices to be heard, you know, and for us to be able to, you know, just like you say, speak loud and clear. So I just think that, you know, we have so much unfairness going on that, you know, we need to step up.
All right, we're going to take another break, and we're going to come right back and continue our conversation.
We got it together, didn't we? We've definitely got our thing together, don't we? Isn't that nice? I mean, really, when you really sit and think about it, isn't it really, really nice? I can easily feel myself slipping more and more waves. That super world of my own. Nobody but you and me. We've got it together, baby.
You make me feel this way. You're first, the last, my everything.
This is James T. Deshay, the host of Thoughts, Love, and Reflection, brought to you by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network. We're here 7 days a week, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, Sunday at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. We're here so that your voice can be heard loud and clear. So call in at 657-383-0309 so your voice can be heard. Dee, we're going to ask you, what is your final thought for this evening?
Well, my final thoughts for this evening, James, is first of all, I got to lay something out real quick. I'm at a loss at where the world thinks we're supposed to be going and what they think we're supposed to be doing. But in all of that, I think that there's one easy solution for everybody to partake in. And that is, no matter what situation we're going through in life, no matter what situation we come up against in our everyday walk in life, in our relationships in life, one question that I found to be a great question to solve most all problems, and that question is, what would Jesus do? In that, I think that the I factor becomes insignificant. And right will be the answer to all life situations. What would Jesus do? Thank you.
All right. Cheryl, your final thought for this evening?
I just have to say that I love what you said, Dee. I love it. Very, very, very good show tonight. And it brought something to our attention that we may not have thought about or gave much thought about. But as I always say, no matter what we do, we can always do better.
All right. It's so important that you all know that I appreciate your support and that you're here with me to talk about these issues and debate the kind of things that are going on in our life that we need to stand up for. And if we're not willing to stand up for our children as they go through the justice system, then we're willing to let anything go by. So it is important that we recognize that we fight for what is right and we keep pressuring our government to do what is right in the eyes of all people and not just a select few. We'll be back tomorrow at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Thoughts, Love, and Reflection. Call in at 657-383-0309 so your voice can be heard loud and clear.
So, what do you want to do?
I'm here, baby. I'm ready, baby. I'm waiting on you. Believe me. I am patiently waiting.
What you dream.